Welcome to the Highly Objective Podcast, where we talk to cannabis industry executives and investors and go into the weeds on recent news.
I'm Mark Beginnen. I am the founder, former CEO of Precision Extraction Solutions. I got into the cannabis industry in 2014. With Precision. I was formerly a lawyer, and I partnered with a young gentleman who was very much into the cannabis extraction space. So we founded, you know, Precision Extraction Solutions together, which ultimately we grew the business to become the largest in the space. And in 2021, we were definitely the largest company. We merged with what we believe was the second largest company in the extraction space, which was Cascade Sciences. That was in June of 2021 to create a much larger business to catch the attention of Wall Street. And ultimately we did that because not even a month later, AgriFi Corporation was courting our companies for an acquisition, which ultimately happened in October of 2021, which was in excess of $50 million for the merged companies.
So let's go back to your career in law and how you sort of made the jump. Like, what gave you so much conviction to jump into the space and built what you did?
I don't know if it was conviction at the time. Michigan went, from Michigan, just outside of Detroit, Michigan went medically legal in 2008. And most attorneys, me included, did not want to touch it with a 10-foot pole because of our concern of the illegality. And, we, and particularly me, I like my law license and didn't, want to step too close to it. I did a lot of work on the criminal defense side because the laws were really gray at the time. Flash forward 5+ years, in 2013, it appeared the writing was on the wall and it was okay. And the feds were not going after people who were involved in state activities in the cannabis space, so long as they were licensed and doing things by the book. And that's when I started doing more consulting work in the industry. So along with that, I met my partner, who ultimately became my partner with Precision. And he had this idea to start an extraction equipment company. And at the time, I really didn't really know a lot about extraction, but it's everything in the industry seemed so promising and so new back then, and jumped in with both feet. We started the business in, it was December of 2014. In our first 90 days, we did over $1 million in revenue. So we really shot out of a cannon. And it was shortly thereafter in early 2015, I think March, April, I started closing down my law practice and focusing exclusively on Precision Extraction Solutions. So that's how it all, got started there. And the only time I ended up in court after that was really just doing favors for people. But my background in law helped a lot with the business because a lot of the industry has to do with regulation and constantly evolving, legal landscape.
And how did you guys get off to such a quick start? I feel like that was probably a crowded industry at the time. And how did you set yourself apart, not only at the beginning, but up until you merged to form Sinclair Scientific? Like, how did you go about sort of building it up?
Well, at the time, we were really the first business that was selling, manufacturing closed loop extraction systems. Before that, remember, you with our systems, it's you use light hydrocarbon, butane, propane, or some sort of mix. And people were doing what's called open blasting. They would literally be taking butane, blasting it through a pipe or something with the cannabis in there, the flower, and the oil would come out, which is incredibly dangerous. Butane is highly highly volatile and combustible. The closed loop system is where you keep the butane or propane or both in a constant loop so that it doesn't escape into the atmosphere. Hence, it's a lot. It's the safest way to do it. So we were the first ones really to market it. And I don't want to say on a mass scale, because we were selling to commercial producers, not to hobbyists, but we were the first really to get out there and definitely had that first mover advantage, or at least, you know, with, it's not even a handful of companies. There was like one or two that popped out at the time, two other ones. And we all of us were successful with Precision, though. You treated it. I mean, my background is marketing, you know, prior to my legal work and becoming a licensed attorney. So we marketed Precision as though it was the consumer product, really with big branding, big appearances at trade shows. We couldn't even spend like heavy, we couldn't even have a marketing budget because there was only so many avenues to advertise in, whether it was print publication, online, email blasts, or whatever it could be. So even trade shows, we spent every penny we could on those. So we were everywhere very fast, and that very much assisted us on growing the company and becoming that brand name in the space and the ones that others look to for guidance. Along with that, I mean, the main thing was the best customer service we could possibly provide. So if you combine all that and good technology, you're bound to have a successful company, and we really just checked all the boxes.
That makes sense. So let's fast forward to the merger with Cascade Sciences to form Sinclair Scientific, and then very quickly after, 4 months to be specific, you were acquired by Agrify. So why not wait until the dust settled, integration happened, you know, say 2 months, 8 months later, maybe higher valuation? Like, why sell the company when you did?
Okay, well, let me back up for 1 second. I'll tell you about the growth of the company. So all of 2015, I mean, maybe we did just shy of $4 million in revenue. By 2019, we did $40 million in revenue. That's how fast we grew. And along the way, we did get, you know, this is just Precision at this point, investment from Canopy Rivers. That was a $5 million influx at a $40 million post-money valuation, and that was in 2019. So come 2021, this is on the heels of really the worst year ever with COVID and the restrictions, and everybody's business, the whole industry, the whole country tanked in 2020. And we were starting to pick it up again in 2021. We work closely with Cascade Sciences. They manufactured a number of laboratory devices, including things that are very, you know, relevant to post-processing in the cannabis space, including vacuum ovens. So we were very close with them. We were their number one distributor. Actually, we were everybody's number one distributor for third parties, for third-party goods. But we had started discussions. It was with them, because they already knew, because, you know, with Precision, I was already making moves to either do acquisitions or some sort of merger activity. And that was all through 2020, because we just knew we had to become bigger, even a lot bigger than we were, and not to catch attention of Wall Street, because ultimately, you know, the, you know, exit was part of it. And the other part of it was having a business with a large moat around it, and being bigger at that time was the best way to really secure our position, lower our risk moving forward. So we worked on it for months and months and months. And ultimately, it was late June, early July of 2021, where we did merge together into a newly found entity called Sinclair Scientific. We made that one up. The businesses continue to operate, though, with their own banking, their own accounting, own everything. Because what happened next was just so fast, which was not even a month later, AgriFi Corporation was courting us to, you know, for an acquisition. Now, yeah, we could have, the interesting thing is your question, why didn't you wait? Well, I did want to wait. So I was the, you know, founder, largest shareholder, CEO, you know, ultimately CEO of the whole thing. And I was the holdout. Everybody wanted to sell except for me. So I was very much against that transaction. And I would have, I thought we had a great business, continue to grow and do a deal that made sense, right? That deal did not make sense to me. I didn't want to do it for lots of reasons, but that's why we didn't wait. It wasn't my choice. So AgriFi presented an LOI, I think it was in early, mid-August. Initially, I was okay with it. And then the more I learned, the more I was against it. And they closed that transaction so fast. I mean, I would call it reckless. So within a month and a half, the company was sold, it was acquired.
And, you know, around this time, other sort of cannabis ancillary companies were going public, whether that's on their own or via a SPAC. Was that a consideration? Would that have been a better deal? And also, what would have made this deal more attractive to you?
More money. I mean, every transaction that we had gone through prior to that, whether or not it was, you know, an actual investment from VC or it was, you know, an LOI term sheet executed for an acquisition, we went through one before that, actually, and COVID thwarted it. But every single one was a 2.2x times x revenue. Every single one, for whatever reason, that was the number. We never worked off EBITDA because that was sort of unfair because we were reinvesting all our money into growth. This deal was a 1.3x revenue, and 40% of the consideration was AgriFi stock, which was also going to be, it was going to be restricted for, you know, 18 months, you know, with partial releases along the way. In 6 month intervals. So I was like, this is half off and 40% of the deal is their stock. I didn't believe in their company. I thought that wasn't, I think at some point I literally told them that I don't want their stock. I want cash. I don't think their stock is valid currency. I'd rather have Dogecoin. And that, you know, of course, you know, ruffled feathers. And if you look back now, I was right. I mean, the stock's, you know, gone down 99.999%. They've had two or three reverse stock splits. I mean, just a disaster. I mean, I sold as much as I could along the way. So still a lot of money, but it was, you know, again, half off and 40% of the consideration was play money. That's why I was against it. I wasn't against an exit. I was all for it. Just not that one.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, around that same time and even up to now, stock as a consideration, 40% actually doesn't sound terrible. I've seen that much higher in cannabis acquisitions, but agree with you. Either it's mostly cash, like heavy majority, or it's stock that you can flip and there's no lockup period, right? Not 6 months, not 12, not 18 months. A lot can change over that time with cannabis companies.
Yep. Absolutely true. I think with any company, but either, you know, the fundamentals are there or not. I mean, if a company is good, a company is good. But you know, if it's not, it's not. And you know, certainly there's more volatility when you're dealing with the public markets.
So let's talk about this lawsuit you have against the company. So they did an 18-month holdback of 15% of the consideration. I don't know if that was cash or stock. I assume it was probably the cash. That was supposed to be paid in April of this year, 2023. roughly 5.1 million in cash. So you're in a lawsuit right now because I guess they chose not to pay you that remaining amount. So can you help us better understand what's going on?
Yeah, without getting into the details, I mean, the agreement, it is cash actually at this point. That's sitting there, but the purchaser, you know, in this case, Agrify, is allowed to hold back funds for pending claims, right? So they're claiming that, hey, there's still risk out there that, you know, we're going to need this money to, you know, pay off this or that. So we're not giving it to you. So, and, you know, they beat us to the punch. They sued us first. So actually, we're the defendants in that case. And right now, so we're litigating it. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be able to settle it, but that's where we're at right now. I think this is sort of like a divorce. The only people are going to really win are the attorneys. So, you know, hopefully cooler heads will prevail and we'll settle that.
And you were also trying to do a takeover of the company at one point in time. So given that the market cap today is $4 million, it's a penny stock, as a part of the settlement, would that possibly give you any of the assets from the acquisition?
No. We're not looking for that. We're basically, the money that's being held back is either for, you know, the sellers, which is me and you know, other people, you know, or it's for to pay pending claims. That's it. So, any funds that would go out, we're just seeking the money. It's sitting there in escrow. Oh, that's what you need to know. It's in a third party escrow account, so the money's there, it's not in their bank accounts, right? So what you suggested, if they couldn't afford to pay it, I mean we're owed more money than their market cap right now, but the cash is sitting there, so it wouldn't be necessary to do something like get assets.
Got it. Yeah, because I just made the assumption that it was going to be from the balance sheet, and likely they probably have limited cash today. But if it's in escrow, totally makes sense that it's there. It just needs to be decided if that can be released to you guys or released back to the company, depending on how the ruling comes out.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Yeah. And so, I did attempt a hostile takeover of the company a year after the acquisition. They had done a reverse stock split, and then forgot exactly how it went down. They did a deal where, with some, you know, third party where their stock was diluted. I forgot, it was like 67% or something, meaning I owned at that moment 9.9% of the company. Right. I was the largest shareholder of Agrify for a matter of days. And then I got diluted along with everybody else. So, you know, overnight I owned, you know, 3-some-ish percent. And okay, I'm like, this is going to be a never ending fight, expensive fight here. So I sold all the stock and I got rid of my position.
And help us understand what, you know, I'm not going to dig through all the filings. So since you're close to the matter, what went wrong with Agrify?
I think they're just focusing too much on hoo-ha and the stock and press releases rather than people. People matter more than anything. And it just seemed to me, even during this acquisition process, the people weren't happy, you know, ultimately, meaning the employees. And I didn't know their customers, because at that point I didn't think they had any customers, right, on their technology. But I was like, if you treat people like this, this is how you're going to treat your customers. Your employees are going to have a very not, you know, a horrible culture. You're going to have not happy customers. And, you know, ultimately it appears that's what happened. You focus so much on, you know, the stock price, but the fundamentals of the business just fall through the cracks, and then you have a really shitty business. And you know, I know a lot of details, you know, of what happened, but literally they lost, I mean, according to their own filings, I mean, I think they, because I don't know if they filed it yet, but they didn't file. I mean, this is what, October 2023 now. They didn't file, at least up until like a week ago. I got to check now. I haven't checked in a week or so. They didn't file their 10K for 2022, meaning that fourth quarter and then the annual you know, statement is required by the SEC, right? They didn't file that. They didn't file their first quarter or second quarter results. They lost their CFO in February of this year. The CFO hasn't been replaced. They're rudderless ship without a CFO. And in the filing that they made that said they need more time to file for their 2023, they said they lost, you know, approximately, you know, probably more than, I think the number was $183 million. I mean, Precision was always profitable. Always. I'm not saying it was always easy. It was tough, but we were always profitable. And Cascade was a decent business. That was, you know, their revenue, and they acquired two other companies. I think it was Lab Society and Peer Pressure. That was within 4 months of acquiring Cascade and Precision. I mean, who does four acquisitions in 4 months? That's crazy, right? It's hard enough to, you know, to merge with, you know, or to integrate with one, much less four, right? So just lots of really big, you know, missteps. That reporting, yeah, they lost over $180 some million in 2022, according to their own guesstimate. That's what they you know, reported without reporting. I mean, how do you lose all that money? I mean, not even, you know, a year later, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think that the last sort of Q I saw was for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2022. I'm not even sure if I can find anything in 23, but yeah, behind on filings, a lot of restatements of quarterly and annual filings. And just from what I can see, it looks like COGS were much higher than revenue, and then also pretty high G&A, which means you already are starting at a loss. So hard to recover from that. And it seems like a lot of cash burn, obviously, with the losses, even though they could raise once upon a time a lot of money in the public markets. I will do some summary of this, but it just seems like some bad sort of starting points already.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just, and people say, oh, it's the market. No way. That's, I mean, at one point, I guess this is my guesstimate, but it kind of tracks with their numbers. They were burning $11 to $14 million a month last year, burning, right? So, you know, you acquire all these businesses that were either profitable or sustaining themselves, and then you turn it into a total utter loss. I mean, disaster loss. Can't get a CFO. It's crazy. But anyway, so I was, you know, hindsight 2020. Yeah, I was, you know, I had good vision back in, you know, 2021, you know, leading up to this acquisition. I did not want to do it for lots of reasons, which ended up all turning out to be correct.
Let's talk about your new company. So started over, tell us about Prodigy and kind of, you know, why you're going back to, you know, the same company as before, and sort of what's the game plan here to succeed?
Well, the first thing about that is, how did we have an acquisition of my company by a publicly traded company, and they didn't have, you know, the founder, largest shareholder, and CEO under a non-compete? This is an interesting story too. Our operating agreement, with Precision, said if anybody's dragged along, you know, these drag along provisions is what they're called, you know, through a deal they didn't vote for, then they get actually one thing, which is no non-compete. So because I was dragged along through that deal, I had no non-compete. Now Agrify, they figured this out toward the, you know, in the last week or two of the process prior to the acquisition. And there was, yeah, killed the deal, you know, and then it came back, and, you know, I wanted, you know, so just give me cash and this much. And they said F off. And, And they still did the deal, which I think was crazy. So basically, you know, October 1st, I was, you know, overnight, October 1st of 2021, I was cash rich, job poor, and with no non-compete. So basically, I used that cash to do lots of stuff, fun stuff, and then to also start a competing company. Prodigy Processing Solutions is a rinse repeat of Precision Extraction Solutions, just with better people. Let me rephrase that. We had great people at Precision. So there's people and there's some new people. These are all great people. A lot of the same suppliers, plus some better ones, better technology, you know, 8 years of lessons learned, and being fully funded. So this is was the birth of Prodigy. And so for all the reasons I just said, we have a competitive advantage. And right now we just launched, not even 90 days ago. You know, we did a soft launch, did a few press releases, attended some conferences, including we saw each other at the Benzinga Cannabis Conference in Chicago, which was a great time, and a good networking event. So Prodigy, we released the Pro X, which is a large commercial slash industrial hydrocarbon processing solution. And it is the fastest piece of equipment and the most efficient that's ever been built. And we are continuing to innovate with some new stuff that we're even coming out with that's gonna be very much disruptive to the industry. I would say the Pro X is incredibly innovative, but the things that we have coming out will certainly be disruptive to the industry. And we're leading the industry down the path toward federal legalization, where you're gonna have to do very much large industrial processing. So that's where we're at right now. Our website's prodigyusa.com, if anybody wants to go take a look at our equipment and what we're doing. But we're gonna make a lot of waves, and we already are. So that's where Prodigy's at right now.
Yeah, and I assume some of that is winning customers from your prior company in AgriFi. So, you know, how many prior customers have you been able to bring over to Prodigy, and sort of, you know, what's kind of that cycle? I think, you know, the machines that you previously sold maybe have like a 2, maybe 3 year life cycle. So kind of help us understand how you're winning customers and what's sort of the differentiator.
Well, there's a few. One is, okay, there is, yeah, this, it's sort of like a car, 2 to 3 years, people, you know, things get better, you know, they would trade it in, do things like that. And the trade in has a lot to do with our strategy as well. But we are the only company that's out there now that is, we are American made, we're made in the USA, everybody else is foreign. And that matters for a reason here, because we're the only one that uses 316L pharmaceutical grade stainless steel and made in the USA. Even with Precision, it was always, you know, a question, are we getting the right steel from these foreign suppliers? And that's a big concern. And those are all 304 stainless steel, which is a lower quality of steel. So ultimately, you know, right now you have it state by state. The feds are, you know, they can't regulate something that's on the Schedule One list of controlled substances. So when it comes to like operator safety, you have the local authority having jurisdiction, whether, you know, it's the fire marshal or some sort of other, you know, organization looking out for operator safety. But there really isn't a lot of oversight for consumer safety. Your local health department, what is it? Sometimes the state, they make you test it for, you know, pesticides, things like that. But when it comes to, for example, metal leaching, that's a big issue. That's a big issue. And when the FDA comes in, they're going to be looking at that. And when you have, you know, genuine 316L pharmaceutical grade stainless steel, this is not an issue. So any company that's out there that's sophisticated enough and they intend on growing their businesses and surviving through federal legalization will need Prodigy's equipment or something similar, and something similar just doesn't exist. So not only is our equipment it's faster. It's faster just operating like any other, you know, competitive equipment, but it's safer for the consumer. It's, you know, certainly, you know, the safest for the operator. One thing that we did on our equipment is we got it rated. This is by PSI, which is any legitimate extraction equipment, you know, producer uses PSI, which is pressure safety inspectors, out of Colorado as the third party engineering firm which certifies these goods. We are the only one rated to negative 300 degrees Fahrenheit to operate at. So really when you're operational, you'd be operating more like a negative 100, 100, you know, 10 degrees Fahrenheit. But what that also does by operating that cold, and we're the only ones that are certified to do that, you eliminate the need for winterization. Winterization is removing the fats and lipids. That is a 12 to 24 hour process. With our equipment, it runs so cold, there's automatically separation while you're doing the extraction. So you just saved yourself, you know, another 12 to 24 hours. So we're the only ones. So there really isn't, you know, do we have competition out there? Absolutely. But are they meeting these standards? Absolutely not. Are we faster, more efficient? Yes. We're really designed for a, you know, again, a sophisticated business that's operating as such, that is concerned about their future and consumer safety, as well about the, you know, day-to-day efficiencies on, you know, running the equipment.
And with the 316L metal, how does that impact your gross margins relative to your prior company?
Well, that's interesting, because it's hard to do that because it really is expensive. Domestic manufacturing is more expensive. That's why everybody is you know, doing their stuff primarily out of China, right? Again, past relationships. So Prodigy, one of our partners is Scott Mitchell. Scott Mitchell owns Mitchell Fabricators. He's been doing pressure vessels for 50 years, 50 years of experience. Mitchell Fabricators, you know, under Scott Mitchell had a nuclear certificate. That's how sophisticated they are in terms of the precision of their builds and the quality. So that's a partner of Prodigy. So because it's a partner, we are essentially manufacturing it, this equipment as well. Hence, we don't have, we have control over the manufacturing process and the costs, and we don't have to get a margin before we sell it to ourselves. So we are set up, again, back to the 8 years of lessons learned. So we're keeping that all in-house. That's why we can keep those costs competitive. And along with that, we are offering all our, you know, new customers. They're like, oh, well, I have my equipment. We don't have to change, and it's really going to be expensive. And we are offering a buyback. So we're buying back competitors' equipment. We'll buy it from them a minimum for what the, you know, the value is in the used market, and maximum what they bought it for. So we're really being competitive out there, making it easy on our new customers to, which is a lot of our new customers are Precision's old customers, or, you know, or competitors, and we're gonna buy back this used equipment and make life really easy and provide our customers with a smooth transition into better technology.
Yeah, and that's amazing that you're able to use that for sales. I guess let's start with something we didn't discuss yet. How are you funding this company? Because that takes cash to be able to buy back their current equipment that isn't Prodigy.
Well, that back to the buyout, right? I mean, geez, you know, ultimately I got over 7 million cash out of that deal, you know, so far. So Agrify's funded it. So we don't need third-party funding and financing. We just don't. However, that being said, once we can demonstrate our trajectory, then we will be speaking with, you know, certain, you know, VC and other funders out there, because our goal is to accelerate that growth. So for now, and any funds that we would seek out in the future is all for growth, just growth capital, not survival capital. But we have all the money that we need, for our operation. According to our cash flow for our business plan here, we don't need capital. We will never need capital. We'll be profitable within 6 months. And I could say that confidently because I've done it before, right? So this is just doing it again, just doing it better. So the third, party funding is just to throw at marketing, to throw at technology, and R&D, and to, scale the company even more rapidly than our current plan calls for.
That makes sense. And I think the other thing I want to ask you on is, customer payback. So how do you define that? Because I know you've mentioned previously you have a customer in Oklahoma that, based on their estimates, they're getting like a 60-day ROI. So is that based on their gross profit over what the machine costs, which I believe you've mentioned also it's potentially up to $500,000, right? Like a Rolls Royce or a very nice house. So kind of walk us through that ROI calculation.
Well, it depends on, it depends on the price of the input material, the cost of your input material, what you're selling, coming out of it. Are you white labeling, for example, distillate that you're going to make with the Pro X, or are you going to make it into ultimately a final product, whether or not that's a liquid in a vape cartridge or a gummy, et cetera, et cetera. That was in Oklahoma, and Oklahoma, they were giving away the flower. When I say that, you're talking about, anywhere from, $10-$15 a pound for not great material up to like $30-$40 for great material. So based on those incredibly low costs of the input material, and and a reasonably high cost of for the extracted goods, that was their ROI based on their profit, and which is crazy. I wouldn't say that would be for everybody, but in that microcosm at that time, that's what it was. So right. Yeah.
And even others though are about 6 to 9 to 12 months potentially, right? So any time for equipment of that sort of spend, six figures, if you can pay that back in 6 to 12 months, even that's very attractive.
Yeah, normally it's a year and a half. 18 months to pay off any sort of CapEx investment like that. In our marketplace, it could be anywhere from 60 days to, say 2 months to, 9-12 months. It just depends on how much volume you have. That's it. The volume and, your cost of goods and, your sale price. So it's not a lot of math to do, but that's really it. So it's paid off relatively quickly. With our equipment, we've demonstrated there's some companies out there doing three 8-hour shifts a day. They're going all night, 6-7 days a week. We're like, well, use the Pro X and you can go one shift 5 days a week. Imagine how much money you're saving on people, and keeping the lights on and an incredible hassle of doing it like they're doing it. So a piece of equipment like the Pro X can make their life very much more efficient and profitable.
Yeah, no, that's a huge cost savings, especially on labor, which is very costly when you factor in, health insurance and other costs for employees.
Yeah, and there's actually just one other thing, because not only are we doing the buyback with the customers, we worked out a deal with Excess Financial, which is one of the premier financing companies for equipment in the cannabis space. Excess, just the letters Excess Financial, .com. They only work with big companies, though. You have to have at least $10 million of revenue for the past year and been in business for at least 18 plus months. So they're very particular on who they fund. But, so with their, score of customers, We've offered them 0% financing, right? So, and the how we do that is basically we're giving a credit to the lender, right? And that we're paying down basically the interest rate. So for these and all those companies are very sophisticated, right? So you can get, you know, 5% putting your cash in a savings account right now. I mean, it's not that hard to find, or a money market. So we're offering 0% financing, where you can't get financing for less than 18% in this industry. So for them, we're offering 0% financing. And for anybody who's listening out there, if they have their own lenders, we'll do the same. So to them, it's free money. So they're going to make 5%, you know, separately, because they're paying 0% on our equipment.
Yeah, yeah. And that's potentially taking the 18%, a 23% delta.
Yeah.
Pretty advantageous. So let's talk about other pushbacks then. So it seems like you've made it very easy for people to consider swapping over to use Prodigy to get it financed. What other pushbacks are you facing right now?
We're really not. I'm facing a lot of, you know, pushback. It's just, you know, people getting them to move from, you know, what they have into taking, you know, a step into just making a move. It's like getting new furniture for your house. It's like, ah, this is okay, right? So it's just like, you know, convincing, you know, it's not us convincing, it's really them convincing themselves that, hey, I'm just, you know, gonna make a move and do it. Not providing equipment for small producers. So like with Precision, we had much smaller equipment, and those just aren't our customers now, unless they plan on scaling, where our Pro-X can, right now it has 8 columns, right? So it does 80 pounds a run, and you could, you know, reduce that down to, you know, 3 or 4 columns and save a lot of money. But then you have a piece of equipment that can scale up to that 80 pounds. So you could start at 40, scale up to the 80, you know, down the road, you know, make a larger investment. So, but we're not doing any sort of like 10, you know, 5-10 pound units. So that would be, you know, I wouldn't say a pushback, but that's just not our target market. So that's not our customer.
Right. So would it be appropriate to say you're going after more of the enterprise customers, so more of the MSOs or the larger single state operators? So folks who are, you know, more SMBs, let's say, relatively in this industry, aren't really your focus?
Yeah, more of the MSOs, the publicly traded companies, the large producers that are coming out now, the new ones, like say, for example, New York, that need to get started, but they want to get started right. And a lot of these ones, you know, they've learned from the mistakes made in every other state in this country, and they want to start right. So we're talking with a number of them, and even though they're processing projections may not be today what the Pro-X can actually do, they want to start right and grow into it. And that has a lot to do, because they know that federal legalization is coming. So why would you invest in something that the FDA may just say you can't use that anymore? So for that reason, plus the fact that it can scale and they intend on operating very successful businesses, but they're going to grow into it over the course of a year or so. But they're starting out right. So that's additionally our customer.
And what about roadmap for additional products? Anything on the roadmap?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have, I mean, I can't really talk about the, what we have in development right now, but within the next few months, we're going to make some announcements. Again, I believe the Pro-X is incredibly innovative. It's more efficient, the most efficient on the market. It's the best that's out there today. What we're coming out with in short order here is disruptive. So, yeah, that's, I can't really talk to the technology, but stay tuned.
Sounds good. And how about just your plans for this company? What's your 3-5 year outlook look like?
Really to hyperscale. I mean, just like, you know, Precision went from an idea. Oh, by the way, Precision was started with $45,000 in capital. Just, yeah, just put that into perspective what it was. I mean, basically you get half down and, you know, half would be the deposit and the other half plus shipping, you know, expense would be paid before you ship, right? So we didn't have any accounts receivable, and those few times we did have accounts receivable, it didn't work out so well, so we stopped doing that. So this is why, you know, this business is structured similarly, but we're starting with millions of dollars, right? When I was used to starting, you know, from the history of starting with basically nothing. So we are starting off with an incredible advantage here in terms of capital and knowledge. So Precision went from, you know, nothing, a $45,000 investment to a $55+ million exit within 7 years. So the goal with Prodigy is to dwarf that, because we are, you know, we're more sophisticated, we're more knowledgeable for all the reasons I said earlier. We're positioned to do that within 3 years. And with federal legalization, which is everything that we're doing, is with that in mind, that we will either become part of a larger organization when that happens, or, you know, we will be that, certainly. So it's to, you know, really it's a 3-year runway.